Isn't it time you lived life on your own terms? If not now, when? Visit abrilliantgamble.com for more information on Blair's new exciting online coaching program. Midlife doesn't have to be a crisis. It's a time to rethink who you are and what you really want from your work, your life, and yourself. Sacrificing your soul stops here. It's time to make some plans, make them happen, and live the life you deserve. With interviews, stories from her own adventures, and expert insights, here's your host, best-selling author, speaker, and coach, Blair Palmer.
Hello and welcome to episode 118 of the Brilliant Gamble podcast. I hope you are really well. I wanted to kick off today talking about the Corporate Escapees Facebook page. I would absolutely love if you would come and join us whatever stage you're at in transitioning out of your current way of working. So even if you're just at the very early stage, you're just thinking about it, you're listening to the show, getting inspiration, but you're not sure if it's for you yet. Or if you're at the other end of the journey and you're already doing it, but you're trying to make it work and you want some input about that, now that your dream is a reality, how do you make it a success? And of course, everything in between. The group is still small enough that you'll get my personal attention. So if you post on that group, I can guarantee you right now that I will respond. I'll absolutely love it. I'll dive straight in and I can share some advice. I can point you in the way of resources. I can engage the rest of the group. So this is a really good time. I can't guarantee how long the group is going to be small. In future, it might be more difficult to get my attention. So now is the time to join. But if that isn't an inducement, it's also a great place to tap into the wisdom of the other wonderful people in the group. Something that I think is really important is to be a bit selfish at this time and to get support. You know, I've been there myself, scurrying away in private, not wanting to ask questions for fear of seeming naive, just kind of lurking in the background or doing things my own way. And I found out later that if I had just asked the question, I would have saved myself a lot of money, a lot of time, quite a lot of mistakes. So really, this is the perfect place to come and ask your questions, no matter how naive they are. Seek support, get some input, and progress in a way where you really feel confident that you're informed and you're doing what's right for you. I will, of course, be starting up a discussion in that group, Corporate Escapees, about this week's podcast and the themes that come up. So why don't I tell you a bit about our show today? Your career path isn't always a straight line, and the job that you do now or the job you're thinking of doing next might not even have existed when you were having your meeting with your careers advisor all those years ago. It's one of the reasons, actually, that we get itchy feet. We see an alternative way of pulling together all our experiences and expertise that would enable us to do something for a living that just wasn't possible a decade or two ago because it just didn't exist. Well, my guest today is Tim Tavender, who now runs courses helping people to create online courses. He started life as a fitness instructor, but on the advice of his wife, he noticed that he could pull together all kinds of aspects of his experience to do something completely different, which initially was digital marketing. But a health crisis forced him to look hard at his life and find a way to work that blended much, much better with his family life and that would help other people do the same. In this interview, we talk about his journey to finally discovering what he does now, the importance of thinking about your ideal client as a starting point for thinking about what business you might like to be in, the importance of thinking about your niche, something I talk a lot about on this show, we cover in this interview, and how to leverage your time and expertise by creating online courses. As someone who's really obsessed with creating online content right now, I learned a lot from Tim and became more and more confident that this is the right way for me to go. I'll share all of Tim's contact information at the end of the show, but if online content and particularly courses is interesting to you, definitely check him out. Let's go over to the interview. Tim, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Well, it's great to have you on. Now, we've got your wife on the show as well coming up. So yes. It's going to be very interesting talking to you both separately and then trying to imagine afterwards, how do those two things fit together? But having spoken to you both, I think what you're doing together sounds so aligned and beautiful. And maybe in our conversation today, we'll talk about how that works.
It's very, yeah, very, yeah, definitely.
People, yeah, two people working, neither of you with, in inverted commas, proper jobs.
No. We're unemployable, probably.
Yeah, almost certainly. So we'll get into all that, and we'll get into some of the work you're doing now and ideas. I'm really looking forward to talking to you about the future of work and how work is evolving. But let's start with how you got to be where you are today, because you're currently helping people to create online programs, online training courses and all of that. But that's not your background. You started off as a fitness coach, right?
Yeah, well, I did all that kind of stuff. As a kid, I wanted to be a PE teacher. You know, I thought that would be a great move because I liked sport. I thought everybody loves PE. I'll be a PE teacher. That'll be an easy job. Get loads of holidays, all that kind of stuff. Until I started doing some coaching a bit later on, some hockey and things. And I thought, oh, hang on. this isn't what I thought it would be. So I had a bit of a swerve. I did my old sports science degree. And then after I left uni, I ended up in sales for my parents' company. So I got a bit of experience in sales and marketing, kind of completely sort of making up as I go along. And I always had this kind of wanting to get back into what I had done as a degree, which is sports science. And back then, talking sort of mid-90s, there wasn't a lot of things you could do with it, apart from become a PE teacher or go into fitness. So I kind of then realized I had to retrain, and I had to add all these other qualifications. So ended up becoming a fitness trainer and I went to work for someone else for a couple of years and then started my own business up back in 2002 and ran that with a colleague. That business is still going today, funnily enough. But I left it about 2010. I stopped being a fitness trainer because I thought to myself, well, A, there's a ceiling to what I can earn doing this onesie twosie stuff. And B, it was just the hours were all over the place. And I wasn't seeing my wife, who you've got coming up on the podcast. I was up and out before she was awake and she'd go off to work. And then I'd come back in the day for an hour or two and then I'd go off again and I would be back till sort of 10:30 at night. And so we barely saw each other for a while. So I was like, this isn't great. So I then had a complete career change. And I looked at, in fact, it was Ursula, my wife, that sort of mentioned to me. I didn't know what I could do. I thought, I'm a fitness trainer. What else can I do? And she was very good. And you'll get this when you listen to her podcast, that sort of saying, right, okay, these are all the skills you've acquired. You've run your own business for this time, done marketing and sales and accounts and admin. And don't forget all that experience you got working for your parents' company and sales and stuff like that. So it's like, yeah. So I went into digital marketing then. And I saw it very much as one of those things that it didn't exist when I was at school. You know, there was no one in my career's lessons at school saying they wanted to go into digital marketing because, of course, the internet wasn't there back in the 80s. So I ended up getting into digital marketing and I kind of had to start from the beginning again. It's almost like I wouldn't say it was an internship, but I'd learned a lot myself about how to get websites higher up in Google and a bit of paid so search, they call it, Google Ads and things like that. But it wasn't until I went to the agency I really learned the sort of how things really sort of put together in that respect. And I worked for just over a year for them, realized I was unemployable and decided to go out on my own. And that was 2010, and decided to sort of just work helping people with their digital marketing. And of course, in that time, you sort of end up doing all sorts of other things as well, related to marketing. And one of the things I always felt with agencies is that they take responsibility for their clients to maybe get higher in Google or get more traffic to the website. But that's where it stops. They don't necessarily think about what happens after that. And I was very much keen on all that kind of stuff. What I then did is I thought, well, do you know what? I've got this expertise in growing fitness businesses. I've also got this expertise in now generating leads. I'll marry the two together. So I started focusing a bit more on the whole health, well-being and fitness market for a bit. And it was then I started my first course. And I created a course, it was in 2012, I think it went live. I always remember waking up one Sunday morning, and I'd spent ages on this course putting it together. And I say ages, it was like a long time, months. A very simple course, a number of videos put together to show trainers how they could advertise themselves. And I remember this one day, waking up a Sunday morning, and a sale had dropped into my inbox. And I know a lot of people that have ever built online courses or sold online courses, they're like, wow, you know, that worked completely without me. So this concept of building it once and selling it many times was sort of on my radar then. But it hadn't sort of fully formed back then as to how I was going to do this. So I sort of continued with my digital marketing business, and then kids come along and then you have to sort of, you know, you do the right thing and you try and provide, you know, the lifestyle that you want. And so the digital marketing consultancy very much was at the forefront then with me sort of trying to build courses around it and selling those courses around it. There was a sort of a pivotal time back in 2015 where I was pretty sick, and I had for a number of years I knew I'd had this this sort of hereditary kidney condition, and I was told by a doctor years ago that it could get worse and you could end up with your kidneys failing, but it could be when you're too old to care about it. So you know, by then you've had a good innings you don't get. But so I just put it to the back of my mind, but it sort of hit me as a 41-year-old, and I ended up just literally, it was around about the same time as my son was born. Over that sort of period, it started to get worse. And then 2015, I found myself having kidney transplant. And this is a story I've only recently decided to share. It's possibly to illustrate more how important it is to if you are a sole trader or a small business that has almost like maybe like a consultancy-based thing where you're trading time for money, that it's important you have these other streams of revenue. Because I remember being sat on a hospital bed. I'd just been told by the surgeon all these wonderful things that could happen, including not be around the next day. And I remember thinking, oh, right. I wrote a few emails out to clients. Could you make sure you pay that invoice this week? And other clients, oh, you might not hear from me this week. I'm going to be in hospital, so I'll speak to you next week, sort of thing. And I just thought to myself, this isn't right. I shouldn't be sat here. What could be, the time that is so precious, I shouldn't be sitting there writing notes to clients and chasing up invoices. And that really drove it home to me that this needs to change. That whilst I enjoy working with clients as a consultant and managing their ads for them, and particularly the smaller clients, that where you can see the change it has in their business, right? That's the ones I enjoy working with the most. If I wasn't here, it would go. And at that time, I was solely responsible for, you know, the family income. And aside from that, it's like, well, you know, I sold these courses, quite a lot of courses actually over the years before, but I'd never sort of considered it to be the business, right? It was something that I had on the side. And it was kind of then I thought to myself, this is something I need to do more of. So it's a bigger part of my business. It's not, you know, so I've got this, not, it's not, I wouldn't call it residual income, but it's certainly income that would come in without me. And the way I always see it is like the music industry, is that you would, you know, they create records, they put them out there, and they, you know, they earn the money out there in the, yeah, in the world, people buying their records and things like that. And that's I've got this sort of larger analogy about the music industry, because I think it's a great industry for this kind of thing. But certainly I felt in that moment, I thought, right, I can't be sat here on what could be my deathbed chasing up clients who hadn't paid me when they said they would. And so I thought, right, yeah, this needs to be a bigger part of what I do. Alongside that, though, a lot of people must be in the same position as me, not just because they're ill, but because maybe they have other commitments that mean they can't work. Maybe they're carers, or maybe they have these, you know, time-consuming commitments that mean that they could benefit from this whole process of going through creating something that they're an expert in, building a course or a program or a mastermind, whatever it might be around it, and then being able to kind of automate the sales to it and leverage themselves. And I know that, you know, if a lot of people are listening to this that are perhaps thinking, well, you know, I'm a coach, I'm a consultant, I'm an expert, a trainer, a teacher, a consultant, whatever it is, how can I make this happen? And the answer is there's lots of different ways. But we all have expertise. We all have something we can share with people, and doesn't necessarily have to be shared in a one-on-one scenario. So I became quite keen on sort of pushing that as a way to help others and myself at the same time, to get beyond the whole, you have to be in a workplace 9 to 5, and you have to sit in front of people to earn money. And that's the way we are brought up. With school, you go to school 9 o'clock in the morning, you're there till 3, you sit there and you look at somebody in front of you and you learn all this stuff. And it to me is a very antiquated system. It then is replicated in the world of work, again, quite antiquated. And so I thought to myself, right, that, you know, there's a better way. There's a better way, and I can help people to create their own programs, courses, share their expertise in the way that's most conducive to their own lifestyle, and they design it the way they want it. And that's why I developed the Pride Mastermind, was that I wanted a way to be able to guide people and help people on how they could go from, you know, sort of first off to get that clarity around the ideas that they want, to then produce it into something tangible they could sell. And that's either selling it when they're not even present, which is, I know it's a model which is, it's been going a while now. You know, I sold my first course that way in 2012. But more so that you can have more impact on people if you deliver things still where they see your face, like we're doing now, but you don't necessarily have to be doing it one person. And I think that's where people get stuck. So that's kind of the whole journey where I'm at the moment.
Yeah. So, all right, let's unpick some of that, because there's quite a few things there I think are worth exploring a bit more. So the first thing that I've noticed, you know, I have this community on Facebook called Corporate Escapees, and it's very new, and you know, I pretty much know everyone in there by name, and every time someone joins, I'm very, very grateful. I think I might always feel like that, to be honest. But yeah. I've been asking that group what they need, you know, in order to leave their corporate 9 to 5 or whatever it is that they've been doing that now no longer works for them. What do they need? One of the biggest questions that's come up that's actually really surprised me is, I would love to leave if I knew what I was going to do next. You know, yeah. One of the things that's, and how do I work that out? One of the things that I noticed from your story is a similar thing of having all of these experiences and not being able to work out quite, even that you could put it together, let alone in what way to put it together. And that it needed someone else, in this case, your wife, to say, hang on a minute, you've got this experience. Don't discount them. How can those things work together? And I think a lot of us kind of overlook the the experiences that we have, because we don't any longer want to do that job, we forget about everything that's transferable about that. So, I mean, if you knew then what you know now, how might you have helped yourself to get a bit more clarity about what you could do instead of what you were doing at that time?
It's an interesting question. First off, I think getting that clarity is hard to do on your own. Because that same advice I've probably dispensed to other people. But, you know, when it comes to your own self, you just think, wow, you lose a bit of confidence maybe, or you think maybe self-belief that people, why would they listen to you? There's all these other options and all the rest of it. And so I think what I would do, the number one thing I would do is to ignore. I'd basically get myself off of anybody else's email list. I would unfollow everybody online who's considered to be an expert or a guru. And I would basically just go my own way about what I was passionate about and what I thought. Because what tends to happen is you see the way other people do things, the emails, the bombardment of information out there that you get from other people. And it can knock you off your stride because you think to yourself, well, they're way ahead of me. Or there's somebody else doing the same thing as I want to do, so I won't do it. Which, when you actually think about it, is a bit ludicrous, because if you remember Yellow Pages, if you still remember that, and you'd look in there to see how many building companies there are in your local area, or how many plumbers there are, or whatever like that. There's tons of them. You wouldn't start a plumbing business and go, well, I can't start a plumbing business because there's already five of them in the area. But this thing happens online. We say, oh, this person in America is doing this thing. Maybe I can't do the same thing because I'm targeting the same audience. And I would definitely, number one, I would ignore any of the other stuff out there, because a lot of the stuff that other people are putting out there is very self-serving. They don't want other people to encroach on their marketplace. And it can have a detrimental effect on your own confidence, because as you pointed out, everybody that has any kind of experience has something to offer, and it doesn't matter how far you go back either. You know, there could be some things where you've had experiences growing up as a child, or university, or your first workplace, or whatever it is, there is something about something you worked out, something you did, or something you learned to do that can help other people, and other people will enlist you for your services, for your help, because they want a shortcut. They want to know somebody else has been there before. So I think I would blank out everything that was bombarding me from outside, and secondly, I would be a bit more. I would tell myself to have more self-belief in the areas of expertise that I have. Because that's exactly what I was doing back then. I was devaluing, undervaluing all the experiences I'd accrued starting, running, growing my own business. And it's one of the things as well that happens, certainly the stuff that Ursula and I talk about with the returning to work stuff that she does, is it seems that there's a lot of mums out there that do the same thing. They've had these careers, they stop to have a child, and then they think, oh no, I haven't done anything for these years. And then they discount all the things they do to just keep everything running, to look after a child, to, you know, all the experiences they had before. So it in any field, I think in any arena, you can actually be blind to your own abilities and your own expertise.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think that we also overemphasize the technical skills that we have and ignore some of the other qualities that we might bring. So, for instance, when I was at the BBC, obviously my technical expertise was around editing and around interviewing people and getting guests to be on the show and all these kind of things. Writing scripts and questions. But actually, one of the big roles that I played in our team was as a mentor and kind of supporter and encourager to younger members of the team in more junior roles, and helping them to think about where they wanted to go in their careers. And of course, it turned out that skill was the skill, I wasn't paid for that was just something I did because I cared about them and their future. that skill has been the thing that I've turned into a business.
Yeah.
I have to edit my podcasts, of course. So I still draw on that. I still ask questions because I'm a coach and, you know, that's what coaches do. But actually, you know, if you're someone who, let's say you're an accountant, you don't want to be an accountant anymore, that's fine. Those accountancy skills are going to come in useful for running your business. So mm-hmm. that's, even if your business is as a landscape gardener.
Yeah.
There'll be something else like your communication skills or your kindness or your sense of humor, something like that, that you don't get paid for currently as an accountant, that you'll massively be able to turn to your advantage when you start your next venture, whatever it might be.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting because one of the things that I do in my program at the very start is a sort of a values-based exercise. Now, my experience isn't in that arena, but the exercise, it helps people to identify what their core values are. And the reason why I do that is because it helps to sort of bring out who people should be working with and who they shouldn't be working with. You know, what do they stand for? Who do they admire? What companies do they admire? And it helps them to sort of, you know, pinpoint things about themselves. Because when you start to grow any business, you think about the technical side of things, don't you? You think, what can I do? And so therefore you set this business up and you go, right, you know, like I use the example of a plumber. So I can do plumbing. And then clients come to you and you end up with a bunch of clients, all different people that have actually just come to you. Whereas I like to try and take a different approach and say, right, who do you want as customers? You know, who do you want to repel? Who do you not want as customers? Because you don't want a business, if you start growing a business, you haven't thought about these things before, about what your core values are, what you stand for, what you stand against, then you're going to end up with a business down the line that you probably don't like very much because you don't like the people you're working with. And I don't mean that derogatory to the clients, because we're all different. We all have clients we love and clients we don't get on with. And it makes sense that you go after more the ones that you like. So if you understand that at the start, you know, it helps you to sort of define, you know, the example that I've used before is that if you are somebody that has a high integrity, is always feels that they want to be honest, and you know they always want to be transparent in the services they deliver, then that has to come out in how you deliver your service, and obviously who the people are that you work with. So you wouldn't want to then work with people that don't have that same value set, because you will hate working with them. So that sort of, I think that has to come first, because then what that does, it helps people to go, well, yeah, do you know what? Maybe I shouldn't just work on my technical ability. I should work with these other areas that I really enjoy and love and am passionate about. And that's the sort of business I want. So I think that it's one of those things. In actual fact, one of the people that went through that said they should do this at school. Because, of course, if you ask anybody right now, what are your core values? It's very hard for a lot of people to just sit there and identify what they are. Someone else might be able to say, but for you to sort of think, what sort of person am I? What do I stand for? What do I stand against? It's quite difficult to pinpoint unless you go through these sort of exercises.
Yeah, I think that's so useful, because we do tend to, I mean, you mentioned school careers advisors, you know, all of that is about, and we continue to think about our professional lives in that way. All of that is about hard skill. You know, what are you good at? What are you good at that you can turn into a profession? But actually, there's all these other things that, and so when we're in this moment of transition, we're thinking, what would I like to do instead? You tend to focus on those hard technical skills. But actually, I really love this idea that an alternative place to start is, what kind of people would I like to work with? There are plenty of people that don't like their clients. So I had a guy who, he was advertising himself as a sort of general home maintenance guy, which is exactly what I needed at the time. And so I was getting him over to do lots of things, to put IKEA furniture together and to hang pictures and, you know, just all these little jobs around the house. Mm-hmm. And he's a lovely bloke. He hated it, particularly hanging pictures. Mm. And he would moan and complain the whole time. And I'd bring him biscuits and try to make him happy, but he just hated hanging pictures. And it turned out that what he really loved was plumbing. But mm-hmm. the reason that, funnily enough, as you mentioned, he really loved plumbing, really loved doing bathrooms. And but he'd advertised himself as general maintenance because he thought he would, that would appeal to more people. Mm. And he would get more business. But he was so unhappy all the time, every time I asked him to hang any pictures, that in the end, I said to him, I'll just use you for plumbing. How about that? And you just advertise yourself as a plumber, and be done with it, and don't offer to put up people's pictures anymore. Mm. And, I've seen his adverts on Facebook recently, and he's just doing plumbing. I think that's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, brilliant.
It's kind of, unfortunately, he ended up doing work for clients and he really hated it.
Yeah.
Because he hadn't thought about, actually, what do I really, really love to do? And let me just focus on that and not worry about being everything to everybody.
Well, and that's the thing, is it was, we were saying before about the whole specialism thing. You know, if you are a specialist in a certain area, and, you know, you can pick, so I work with a lot of people in the fitness and health industry still. And, you know, if they're a local personal trainer, then they depending on where they live, they probably have to be a little bit more generalist. You know, if the town isn't too big, then we've got a huge number of people around, they might have to be a bit more general. But when they start to go online coaching, you can start to really zero in, because, you know, if you said, I only train 40-year-old women who are accountants, there might not be that many that in your town that you can pick to be clients. But there certainly will be in the world. And in fact, you probably have to go a little bit more niche than that. Now, when it comes to a 40-year-old accountant who wants to get a bit fitter, they're going to go to that person, you know, and he's going to get around. The news is going to get around that that's what they do. So you sort of have to, you know, you have to think about, you know, you're obviously your market, but at the same time, you know, the guy that you were talking about there was probably just taking on work because he felt he needed all this work. And, you know, he was taking on stuff he didn't necessarily want to do, and it kept him stuck, kept him there. So having specialism, I think, is definitely something that is required when you are building out your own online program, particularly because of the competition that exists. If you're somebody that's teaching people how to get their website ranked in Google number one, then it's going to be very difficult, because the best people in the world are ranked number one for those keywords for a start, but there's also tons of them. But, you know, using, if you were the number one person who got people, who got plumbers number one in Google in their local town, then that would be, you know, a better chance of you getting a reputation, getting more work, and actually being able to speak to those people exactly where they're at. You know, they've got a conversation going on in their mind at the moment about what they need. If you're a plumber and you see someone that says, I can help plumbers get to number one in Google, then you're the one they're going to choose. And I know lots of people have gone over the whole niching subject, but it is so important. And we were talking before we went live about my wife's business. She's got a very niche business, which you'll learn about. People are tagging her on LinkedIn, on Facebook, and messaging her, introduce you to someone, and so forth. And it really, you know, you see it in action. It really, really works very well that way.
Yeah. I think it's really scary to say all the variety of people that you could work with that you're not going to.
Yeah.
Particularly in this world, and I think we'll come in a minute to the creation of online courses and how that works.
Mm.
Particularly when it comes to that, you're absolutely right. If you're too generic, then the competition is too great, but also people don't think of you. I remember when I first started in broadcasting, you know, I have a nice broadcasting voice, I know that. It's one of my assets, but I'm also a good writer, and I'm also a good producer, and I'm also a journalist, and, you know, I can drive a mixing desk, and there's a lot mm-hmm. of things can do. And I was working in a local BBC radio station, and they would very rarely ask me to do voiceover, even though I have a nice voice. They would always ask this other guy. And in the end, I said, why do you always ask him to do it? Because I can do it as well as all these other things. And they said, yeah, but all he can do is speak. That's he's got a great voice. So when we're looking for a great voice, we think of him.
Yeah.
We don't think of you because you could do a whole variety of things. And this seemed very unfair to the sort of 21-year-old me.
Mm.
But actually, it was a really important lesson that if you have too, in a way, if you have too much to offer, people don't think of you when the opportunities come up. You're not the first name on the list.
Yeah. And what you'll find is people recommend you to other people that are asking for that thing, even when they've not used your services before. And I've seen this happen. It happens a lot on Facebook, where somebody states they have a certain expertise in something, and people will tag them, and all those people that are tagging them only know that they do that thing. They don't know how good they are. They've never used their services. They couldn't vouch for them any other way other than the fact that's what they do. Whereas, you know, you're not going to get that if you're a generalist. That people aren't going to start doing that because, you know, you want, well, it kind of, the speciality is trumping all the other signals that you have to give, like the proof, the social proof, you know, what results have you got for other people? When you state you're an expert in one thing, people just, that's it, believe it. You know, they see you've got a blog on it, they see you've got a podcast about it, and maybe you've written a book about a subject. You are the number one person in that niche as far as they're concerned, even though they don't know how good you are.
Yeah. No, that's amazing. Mm. So that leads really nicely into talking about online courses, because as we've been saying, you can't really create online, of course you can create online courses about a whole variety of different things, but no one will know to buy them from you because they won't think of you. So let's talk about some of the advantages. I mean, you mentioned before some of these advantages around sort of residual income or passive income. Now, clearly it isn't passive in that you have to work really, really hard to get to the point where anyone is ready to buy your program.
Yeah.
I guess the question is, you know, how do you start? If you're thinking, I want to do this, I like the idea that all the work is up front and then the sales start coming in and I don't have to. And I had this experience not very long ago when I got my first sale from my online program. And normally when I make a sale, that's very exciting, but then I have to work.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
In this case, I was like, this is very exciting. And my job is done.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I really, really love that aspect of it. Mm. So let's dive into it. What is the, when people first come to you and they say they want to do an online course, what stage are they normally at?
They've got to a stage where they're normally fairly busy in their own business. They've hit that point where they're looking ahead and they're thinking, I can't carry on doing it this way much longer. I need to find a way of leveraging my time. And they hear about online courses, or they hear about, you know, trying to do stuff on the internet. And maybe they've tried a few things. Maybe they've looked at a few webinars, or maybe they've bought a course about courses before or something. And what normally happens is they're stuck. What can I offer? You know, it's exactly the situation I was in those years ago. And most of the people I speak to now, they're like, what would my course be in? So you have to unpick that. And you have to get to, this is why we do the core value exercises. What do you want it to be about? What is it about your job that you love doing? What really, you know, for me in my marketing business, I decided that working with large brands wasn't really something I love doing, because there's all these layers of decisions I have to go through, and, you know, you never see the real impact of what you do as much as you do when you work with a small business, you know, where you hand over 15 leads or something and they're super excited, they sell to five or six of them and it's changed their business overnight, and that's real impact. And I think that you have to have that at the start. You have to have like, what is it I want to, what is my goal for this? What do I want to have people experience through working with me? And then I think you have to then start to sort of think about, right, I've got this knowledge, I've got this expertise, how would I work with somebody? And normally the people that come to me have a process and a system, a way of doing something. So for example, in the fitness niche, they might, you know, they might have a program that people go through, and it might, you know, it might last for say 12 weeks, and they've got the certain steps people have to go through in order to hit the results they want to hit. Well, most of those things aren't, most of the physical things you do, you couldn't really call IP, because, you know, going running or doing press-ups or, you know, whatever it may be, you didn't invent those. It's not like you can protect those. But what you can do is you can form it into your own way of doing things, your own recipe, if you like, your own formula. And then that does become your IP. It becomes something that you, your own system, your own process, your own way of doing things is something that you've developed. And that's the next part. So you sort of work out who you want to work with and what you want to then deliver to them. And, you know, if it's like, you know, the weight loss niche, for example, if you want to help people lose 5 kilograms in the next month, in the next 30 days, you then map out what the steps are. And I have people do this with a post-it notes. So they stick them on a table and they go, right, what are the steps? They put them all in a row. And those steps become the content. So we have the category. So in one of my clients, for example, has these four, they call them four pillars. They've already created that part of it. You know, there's nutrition, there's mindset, there's the physical side of things. And I think there's sort of more holistic side of things. And they have these pillars. They become categories of their course. Or they could be four separate courses. So we sort of map all that out. We sort of figure out how it could all work together. And by the way that I like to deliver this is as a group. Because what I decided was that... And this is something, again, people have to decide at the start, is their delivery, how they deliver this. Is do they want a course that's basically going to be self-led, delivered on their right? You know, so you basically don't have to do anything else. What I find with those types of courses is that the adherence is low. People buy the course and they don't necessarily get all the way through it. I wanted more, you know, when I went through this whole process, I teach other people, I realized I'm the sort of person that likes face-to-face. I like to be in front of people. I like to be on the calls and in the mastermind. Like you, active in the group, knowing the members, being on hand to help them so that the result is more likely. So that's how I choose to work. So I went through this whole process myself. What sort of person am I? What floats my boat? What are my values? What am I good at? I went through all those things and you know, came out with the fact that I'm going to do this face-to-face mastermind, so do it in a group. And that's just my delivery method. That's what I decided to do because I like the fact that there's several people in the group together. We can all bounce ideas with each other. It's called the pride for that reason. You know, we're all together, we're all stronger. And we go through this whole thing together. Now, the other part of that is the fact that I then have leverage. Okay, so I'm not doing, you know, I'm not filling my diary every day with one-on-one calls. I can do one call that day and speak to 10, 20 people. So that's why at the start you have to sort of think about, right, how do I want to deliver this? And one of the things I do is I ask people how much they want to work. How many hours do you want to work? I had a guy that wanted to take Fridays off. That's fine. Take Fridays off. That's absolutely brilliant. I love the fact he wants to do that because he wants to go surfing in Cornwall. But that means now you've got less time to make the money. So then we have to have a slight shift in how you deliver. So that's kind of, you know, the whole process right at the start is unpicking what you know that you can deliver, that you're passionate about, who you want to work with, how it's going to be delivered. And then the actual mechanics of making something, building something, that's for me the easiest part. But it's where a lot of people say they get stuck, the tech side of things. Now, for me, there's a lot of tools out there. I use one called Kajabi, which I absolutely love, which is just point and click, drag and drop, and press a button, and it creates most of it for you. So the sort of technology has moved on to help us to deliver the thing that we want to deliver. So we shouldn't get stuck on that bit. And that's certainly not where we get stuck. So You know, so for somebody that's sitting there thinking, well, this all sounds like good fun and I can create a course and everything, it really comes down to what you've identified about yourself at the start. Okay, which is why we go through exercise. So are you the sort of person that's happy to do video? All right. If you're happy to do video face to face, great. Sit there and with a camera on you and deliver your content that way. If you don't like that, then maybe deliver it as a PowerPoint video presentation and talk over the slides. If you don't want to do that, maybe deliver your content as an audio program. If you don't want to do that, then you can do it written. So there's all these sort of different ways that you would deliver it, but it has to be based on what sort of person you are. Now, yeah, there's a lot of people out there saying you need to do video on courses. Well, it's only true if that's the only way you can demonstrate and deliver something. So people get sort of stuck at that very start point because they think, oh, I have to do this stuff I don't really want to do. And that's because it's not aligned with how they are as a person.
Yeah. Yeah. We do get really hung up on things having to be a certain way. Mm. And again, I think part of the maturity of as you embark on your business and you start to become more confident, you realize that actually doing it your way becomes one of your USPs. Mm. So again, when I was first starting in coaching, all the coaches were very, very neutral.
Yeah.
The whole idea was that a coach didn't have a point of view and that the wisdom only came from the client, from the coachee, and that your only job as a coach really was to ask questions and feedback what you were observing. And I noticed that after a few years of that, I was starting to suffer a little bit. I felt like nobody knows who I am. You know, I could be anybody in these coaches. Mm. I've got stuff I want to say. So I was encouraged by a friend of mine, but I started to say some stuff. And now, you know, if the coaching police ever came over and kind of observed my coaching, I might have a heart attack. I'd certainly be arrested. because I've got a lot of opinions. But the reason that you would work with me is because I'm opinionated. Mm. And I'm not attached to those opinions. If someone wants to disagree with me and, you know, I'm really influenceable. So if they say something different, I'm very likely to say, oh God, that's so cool. Yeah, let's go with that. But I share my opinion. When the same goes with something like an online program, you think to yourself, well, I have to go on video. I don't really like looking at myself on video. I don't like the way I look, or I don't have the equipment. I don't want to be bothered with all of that. Or I don't like the sound of my voice, so audio is out. Okay, fine. So what do you like? And this idea, for instance, of the slideshow, where no one even sees your face. I've seen very, very useful videos like that, where actually I'm not distracted by the person's face. I'm hearing their voice. I'm seeing the information on the screen. That's really what I wanted. And they didn't even have to put clothes on if they didn't want to.
Exactly, yeah.
That's what floats their boat. They can do it naked. I think it's really, really important to think, what is going to work for me? That's the whole reason why you would leave your current job, is because it's not working for you. So you've got to meet the next thing. Obviously work for your customers, but absolutely work for you.
Yeah. And it's interesting because people, once they realize that actually they don't have to do things a certain way, which is coming back to my point about turning all the noise off out there, is, you know, I remember when I first sort of started getting into this, there was this American sort of education company that promoted something called a tripwire. And what a tripwire product is that it's one of those very low priced, you know, $7 or $5 ebook or something like that. And you buy it and then you're immediately offered the next product up. Say, wait, you know, you haven't finished your purchase yet. Would you like this other thing? And I remember sort of thinking, oh, that seems like a good idea. And all the psychology that went into it about, you know, if you the best way to for your brain to verify that you've just made that you've just made the right decision is by making another purchase. And all the whole thing about, you know, do you want fries with that? The whole McDonald's thing. And I really bought into that at the time. And then I launched a product the same way with the tripwire. And it didn't work very well. And what I realized about that was that it was my core values were at play. I didn't like the concept of tripping people up. You know, I didn't like the concept of like, oh, I'm going to try and sell them this small thing in order to try and sell them this big thing at the end. And it brought home to me when the people that come up with this concept said that the tripwire will continue working until one of two things. One is that they decide they don't want something and they press no thanks. And then the purchase is complete or their credit card fails. And I thought to myself, oh no, that's not how I want to market myself. That's not how I want to run my business. But because they were such a prominent company and they had all this great content and everyone was talking about it, I just went down that road. This is why I said that, you know, turn that off, do things your own way. Produce the content you want to produce in your way and deliver it in the way that you feel is going to get the best result for your customers whilst feeling authentic to yourself. And that's kind of, you know, that's certainly how I would advise, certainly how we work with our customers. And then it is an evolution from there. I mean, can you add things or take things away that's going to make the process a lot easier for your clients? You know, regularly when you release a course, you know, we did it with a course that we have in the fitness space, that we had a 1 week for each module. And we realized actually after a bit of time that week one needed 1 week, but weeks two, the second week needed actually 2 weeks for them to all get through it. So we then changed it. So it wasn't weeks, it was modules. So module one, which lasted a week, module two lasted 2 weeks, module three, and so on. So we then, through, you know, feedback and speaking to clients and seeing what people were and weren't doing, we changed it. And so, you know, that's definitely something that, you know, like you were saying before, it isn't residual, it isn't passive. It's, you know, it is very much a business, and you work on it, and you know you can sell things while you're on the beach in Mexico, and you don't necessarily have to be present while you deliver them at that stage, but you know, you can have location and time freedom if you want to create it that way. But it is something you need to continually work on and improve.
I started working on my first online program, I did see it as being quite a simple thing, that you create it, you stick it on the internet, you tell people that it exists, and they will come. And what I've learned, I mean, I think if I knew in advance how long it would take me to start getting it right, I might not have done it. That would have been a bad decision, of course. But, you know, I thought it was very simple, and I embarked on it with that point of view. But actually, you're right, that the work actually seems to happen once you do that. And then, sure, for some people, it does fly off the shelf. It didn't fly off the shelf for me. So then it was a matter of, okay, now I really have to understand, what size audience do I need to be speaking to in order to get customers for this? How do I niche it down so that I'm targeting exactly who I think would really, really, this would really fit, and don't worry about the other people that would get value. They're not my core audience. And all sorts of other stuff then came to play. What other programs need to augment this program so actually people are on a journey. All that happened afterwards. And I wonder, that leads me to one of the questions that I wanted to ask you, which is, what should people be wary of? Because it does seem like, what a brilliant idea, like no-brainer. I just make these things, I already have all the knowledge, and make the videos or whatever it is, audio, whatever, stick it up on the internet and, you know, make loads of money. So what do people need to be wary of, or be aware of, I should say, as they, if they decide this is going to be part of their business model?
The number one thing I would say is actually a story from a guy called Gary Halbert, who's recognized as one of the, you know, the best direct response copywriters that has ever been. So he was a very active in the 60s, 70s, 80s, into the 2000s. Anyway, he's passed away now, but he was in front of a bunch of students, students of copywriting. And he said, right, so you've got a burger stand in New York. I'm going to give you all a key advantage as to what is going to make this the best burger stand ever. Go. So they've all these suggestions have been shouted out, like I'd have the best buns and I'd have the best onions or the best sausages. Another person was I'd have the best location. And they're going through all these sort of physical attributes of this particular hot dog stand or burger stand, whatever you want to call it. And he says, well, I can trump all of you with my one. And they were like, go on then, what is it? He says, I've got a starving crowd. And it was something when I read that, I was like, right, okay. So you can go ahead and you can produce a whole course and you can create this thing. You think this is the best thing since sliced bread. Great. But if no one wants that thing, then you're never going to sell it. So you have to have a starving crowd. You have to be thinking, right, what do these people need from me? What is their burning desire? What problem can I solve for them in my own unique way that is going to change their life for the better? And I think that's something to be aware of, because you could build a course and, you know, you could build this whole thing that you think is great and then no one wants it. So that stuck with me. That's the first thing. The second thing is I genuinely believe that our job as experts isn't necessarily to bombard our clients with everything we know, right? Our key skill isn't in what we know, because it's all on the internet anyway. It's all on YouTube. It's all on, you know, in it, yeah, whatever. You can go online, Wikipedia, whatever, and get the information, right? Our key skill is distilling that information. What is it that they, you know, I can help you as an expert. I can help you cut through all that other stuff that's going to keep you stuck forever. And I can give you the stuff that you need to know because I've been through all that or I've learned it. You know, lots of people out there are thinking about their own expertise. What can you do that you've been doing over and over again, which you've learned over years, that can cut such a huge corner, either saving people money or time or both, that's going to make their lives better very quickly? You know, it's easy to think of examples in health or in business. You know, I need new clients, help them get new clients, or I need to lose weight, help them lose weight. But there's all sorts of other things. I remember going to a talk a few years ago, and there was somebody that had a membership site who had about 1,000 members paying them £7 a month. So it's a £7,000 a month revenue. And what it was a spell of the month. They would get a new spell every month. And these people were really interested in witchcraft and all that kind of stuff. You know,
that's brilliant. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? But you know, there's all sorts of things out there. It could be something from your hobby. You know, do you love horse riding? Or is there a certain way that you train a horse that no one else really does because you came up with it? You know, a way that you can help people to not be nervous the first time they go on a horse? There's all sorts of things you can actually, when you actually delve deep into something that you are good at, you're passionate about, or the rest of it, that you could actually make something out of, because there's enough people in every single niche out there. But you have to find your starving crowd, and that needs a bit of research. You know, you could go on Facebook, have a look in groups, what are people asking for? You know, you mentioned earlier in your group, lots of people asking the same question over and over. Go into, there's still forums out there, going to forums. A really good way is to go onto things like Amazon, onto the reviews of products and books and things. What questions are people asking? What problems have they got? Yeah, you'll see the same things over and over again. Google keyword tool, what people are searching for. And just see if there's enough of those people. And, you know, one thing I use with people when we're doing the research phase of building courses out is we actually go onto Facebook and we use the Facebook ads platform and Facebook insights, it's called, to see how many people meet our target demographic. Is there a big enough crowd? You know? And I think sometimes what people end up delivering, particularly courses that flop, either they haven't appreciated truly what people want, and they've gone primarily for what they think people want. And you know, I did that with my very first course. I decided to build this big membership site that had like 20 different things in it. You know, we covered PR and Google Ads and SEO and email marketing and everything. And when people went in there, it was overwhelming. And in fact, some of the feedback I got was, wow, I don't know where to start. And actually, part of your expertise is to lead them, is to guide them. You know, maybe it'd have been better for me at that point. And it's, in fact, that's what I did after that. Was the next iteration of that course was one funnel. Here's, if you want clients, this is what you do. Step one, step two, step three, and follow it through like that. And here's the resources. Fill in the blanks. You know, we've written all the emails for you. You know, you've done all, and it just sort of cut so much of the problems out of people's lives.
It's so, I mean, as you're talking, I'm thinking, you know, about my own situation, not so much with A Brilliant Gamble, because in that company, I have been, you know, I've created it once I've already got 20 years of experience in business. I know some of this stuff about just being really, really clear about who your audience is and what is the problem that you're helping them to address. But with that people thing, which is my corporate coaching and speaking business, it's much more broad. And you know, it's much more difficult in that business to think about, if I was going to create online content, what would it be that just isn't generic that you could get anywhere? I think these are really, really good questions, and not necessarily just questions that you ask when you're first starting, but questions you continue to ask yourself. You keep that business under review and keep asking, can I niche down further? Can I niche down further? What do I need to be willing to let go of?
Yes.
So that I can really, really focus in. And it sounds like, particularly when it comes to creating online courses, that the more specific you can be and the more you can let go of, the more success you can have from them.
Yeah. And you know what? A lot of people I work with and speak to, they're always like, oh, I can add this thing and add this thing, add this, and because they want to provide value. And I keep saying to them, look, you know, the value is in what are the actual things they need to do? What are the steps they need to take? All this other stuff is just for you because you're not confident about either your price point or, you know, maybe you haven't got the results through yet. You haven't got the testimonials, but you need to sort of think, right, people don't want more. They want to have the results, you know. So the other story is, I told this story to someone the other day and they thought it was great, and you've probably heard it, but I think it's a Tony Robbins one. And it's about the, I think it's a printing press that's whizzing away, and it's on a Sunday, and it suddenly stops, and the manager's freaking out because he's like, oh my God, we're going to lose all this money, and you know, no one's going to get their papers the next day, whatever. So he phones the engineer and says, could you come out? He said, well, it's Sunday. He says, name your price. So the guy comes out, and sure enough, the printing press will stop there. Everyone's standing around scratching their heads. So he goes over to this big sort of pillar in the middle, and it's got a little power console on it, and he opens it up, and he turns this screw, and everything whizzes into action, and it all starts working. And the manager's like, oh, brilliant, but I'll get you the money. Just give me your bill, and I'll go and get the money out of the safe. So he writes his bill down, hands it over, and the manager freaks out again. Oh, you can't charge me $10,000 for this. This is ridiculous. You only turned a screw, blah, blah, blah. And he says, I want you to write down this piece of paper and justify your price. So he writes on this bit of paper, gives it back to him, and the manager looks at it and goes, fair enough, goes to the safe, gets him his money, and gives him his cash. And sort of his assistant manager says, well, what did you write in the paper? I'm curious. And he says, well, turning the screw, $1. Knowing which screw to turn, $9,999. Yeah. And so that whole story just illustrates the whole concept of expertise and the value you bring. And the other phrase that I think it was, I don't know who said this, it wasn't me, but it's not the value of the hour, it's the value you bring to the hour. So you could give someone one piece of advice, you could send someone one email, one text message, and it changes their life. It changes the course of their business. It solves a problem for them. That has value. And just because it was easy for you, it doesn't mean it was easy for them. Just because you didn't spend much time on it doesn't mean it hasn't got that big value. So that's something that, you know, I definitely think people should take away, is that they shouldn't undervalue what they know.
It's been fascinating talking to you, and I've had as I often do in these interviews, yeah. like real value for my own business. And, you know, if people are thinking that this is an opportunity, an option for them as they're embarking on a new career path, then I think they can do no better than to head over to check out your programs, because, you know,
thank you.
It sounds like the questions that you're asking are so fundamental that if you don't start there, you could really end up on the wrong path. So
yes,
thank you very, very much for being with me today.
No problem. It's been a pleasure. It's been nice to talk to you.
I hope you enjoyed that. I loved the versatility that Tim talked about. This whole idea that if you want to make videos, video courses, you do that. If you don't want to be on the video, you can do a slide presentation on video. If you don't like that, you can do audio. If you don't like the sound of your voice, you can do a written course. You can do it the way that you want, that aligns with you as a person. And it's really all about this next step that you're taking is all about listening to your authentic self and working out what's right for you. There's no need to follow the crowd. So you can check out Tim at his website, timtavender.com. His podcast is timtavender.com/podcast. And you can also check him out on LinkedIn. I'll put all the links to those various places in the show notes. As I said at the start of the show, we'd love to see you over at Corporate Escapees, or the Facebook group that we've got. And there are lots of other ways that you can stay in touch with me and the rest of the team. So with information about that, here's the lovely Ivy Palmer.
We'd love to hear from you. Visit our website at www.justabrilliantgamble.com. There you can get all the episodes of this show, plus read the blog. And on our coaching and classes page, you can find out more about the Brilliant Gamble personal development programs to help you navigate your way through the minefield of life, career and change. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Brilliant Gamble, and on our Brilliant Gamble Facebook page. Finally, please leave a review and star rating for this podcast on iTunes, as it helps people find us and take a brilliant gamble of their own.